Yossi Schachter. He's a psychologist. Thank you. So let me just give out a couple sheets. We're not going to need this till later on in the shiur. It's really more of a talk than a shiur, even though I always give shiur. There we go. Who's in the other room? Taharis? I've never heard her. I'd be interested in hearing her. So, hi everybody. My name is Shoshana Schachter, and I teach at Stern College, and I teach Tanakh, and I run the Machina program, which is a program for students coming from non-religious backgrounds, from non-formal Jewish educational backgrounds. Very special program, very special students, and the reason that I feel like very passionate about this topic. Hi, what's your name?
Hi,
Achama. Hi. Just give you a sheet. The topic is infusing spirituality in our children and students. Hi. And, you know, I look around and I feel like I see such a desire to connect. And again, we'll talk a little bit about how we define spirituality, but let me just start with a story. I guess I should start, right? I know that our session didn't.
Someone's going to come in after.
Because this sort of frames it. Hi, welcome. Shoshana Schachter. We're infusing spirituality in this room today, hopefully. Right, I know. It's a... There you go. Hi, everybody. Here, let me give these out. This is, we're going to start with talking a little bit, and then I never speak without Mara Makomos, so welcome, everybody. So I just introduced myself, Shoshana Schachter. I'm getting over a cold, so my voice is a little bit shot. I teach Tanakh in Stern College for women, and you want to come over to this side, maybe I want to make sure. No, it's okay. Oh, you want a table? Okay, so sit there. I'm going to walk around. Okay. And I started telling the people here that I run a program called Machina for students who are coming to Stern from non-formal Jewish educational backgrounds all over the world. We have students from all over the country. We have students from all over the world. And who are coming to have this last opportunity in college to strengthen their Jewish identity. And everybody's coming with a different story. So the reason that I chose this topic for today, infusing spirituality in our children, especially in this day and age, in the age of technology, I feel like even more so people are looking to connect. And to me, I think spirituality is defined by connection to Hashem, connection to God. And I think that this is something, you know, I look around and I see my students, again, literally from all over the world, coming, you know, why are they coming? They're coming halfway across the world to an all-women's college, right? They get there, they're like, okay, where's the men? I'm like 100 blocks up that way. You know, good luck finding it. You know, and they have a dual curriculum, and it's hard, and they're taking the road less traveled, and they're coming to connect, and it's not just them. You know, the students who are also the FFPs, the from births, who are coming to Stern, everybody, and it's, and not just Stern, you know, all over the world. I mean, why is Oprah so popular? Everyone's looking to connect to something, and they end up on her couch, you know, and she has a secret to connection. Well, we have the secret to connection, and I'll tell you this, just to start this, we're going to talk a little bit, and then I'm going to go through some sources just to bring my point home, because I never teach without Mara Makomos. Just with a story, when I was in high school, and I'm dating myself a little, but in 1985, I was a sophomore in high school, and I went to Frisch Yeshiva High School, and we were privileged to take a trip to the former Soviet Union during communist Russia, in the communist era. And here I was, and the point was to bring Judaism to people there, to secretly teach Torah. We went as a group of students because very often they had missions of rabbis that went, and often they would be deported because they looked like they were suspicious. And we didn't look very suspicious. Nobody had beards, you know. We didn't look like we were going to be doing anything illegal like teaching Torah in communist Russia. And it was a life-changing trip. I mean, I'm really teaching Torah today because of that trip. And when you see real Mesirut Nefesh for Torah, it really impacts you. You know, you come back and you never cut Chumash class again. You know, it's been all across the highway, you know? So I went on this trip, and it was fascinating. I had this moment, this epiphany in communist Russia. And here it was, like, I grew up, you know, my parents are, you know, definitely imbued values of Torah in us. I went to Yeshiva Elementary School, Yeshiva High School, went to Mechila for the year, went to Stern, you know? And it took a trip to Russia, you know, to give me this epiphany. We spent some time in Moscow, and then we went to Leningrad, which is now St. Petersburg, and we met a guy named Vladimir Lifshitz. And Vladimir Lifshitz was teaching underground Torah classes in Leningrad. And you know, we talked to him a little bit. We got his name from Students Struggle for Soviet Jewry organizations here. And we went and we were schmoozing with him a little. He invited us to come and, you know, come to one of his shiurim. And of course, there was a guard outside to make sure that the KGB, the secret police, wouldn't barge in the middle. Even though, you know, that is what happened in the past. Sorry. And, you know, we were talking to him. We said, how did you get to do this? He said, well, actually, I didn't really know so much. But I came to this underground class. I had a teacher, Alex Zelichonov, and he was the teacher before me, and he gave this underground class, and I went all the time. I was like his Talmud Mubak. He didn't use that word, but he said I was like his best student. And then what happened was, 2 weeks ago, the KGB barged in during one of our classes, and they dragged him off to prison, and so I took over. You know, I was the best student in the class, so I took over. And the more we were talking to him, it came out that Alex Zelichonov, talk about Mesiras Nefesh for Torah, Alex Zelichonov's teacher, the same thing happened to him, and Alec took over. And then when Alec was arrested, so Vladimir Lifshitz took over. And and we said to him, and you know, we were talking to him for a while, and we said to him, like, you know, and he said, then when I get arrested, you know, you'll see the guy in the front row who asks all the questions, he's going to take over. So we said, why do you do this? And it happens to be, we got back, and like 2 weeks after we got back, we got notice that Vladimir Lifshitz was also arrested. The most amazing part of that story is that 2 years later, I was in Israel, I was in Mechala for the year, and that was the year that the Iron Curtain opened, and people started coming out of Russia, and, you know, I definitely spent some time learning in Mechala, but I was at the airport a lot of time meeting Jews that I had met in 2 years earlier in the former Soviet Union, and Vladimir, at the airport when they got to Israel, Vladimir Lifshitz is one of them. It's really like just the highlight of my life, you know, meeting him at the airport in Israel 2 years later. Anyway, so we said to him, you know, like, why do you do this? Why are you doing this? You know you're going to get arrested. Like, maybe it's better to just learn by yourselves or teach your kids. Like, why do you have to get together and have this class? He said, it's more inspiring for people when we learn together. It's hard for people to do this individually when it's so dangerous. So we said, but why do you do this? You know you're going to end up in prison. And he looked at us and he said, well, how else do you expect me to connect to God? Do you expect us here to connect to God in communist Russia? And my epiphany there, and again, this is someone who had, you know, been to yeshiva my whole life, and I was in the middle of yeshiva high school experience, you know, that it struck me that no, I never realized that there's a connection between learning Torah and relationship to God. And I know it sounds like pashut, you know, it's like, what's the chiddush here? But maybe the way I was taught, and maybe, you know, we talk so much about the concept of God, and we, you know, I could, you know, read a Ramban and tell you all the different sections of it, and do, you know, comparative parshanut and tell you what the nikudat ha-machloket is between this perish and that perish. But the fact that that has to do with our connection to Hashem was an epiphany to me, and it's sad to me that was an epiphany there. But that's what I realized. I'll tell you one other story, and then we'll start looking in the sources a little bit. I have a student, so I have a lot of students from, you know, like I said, all over the world, and a lot from all across the country, and I have, you know, they're all coming for different reasons. You know, some of the Americans, a lot of the Americans, I got involved with NSYSY, and then they wanted to, you know, take it up a notch, you know, their Judaism, and some people from other countries are coming because there's so much anti-Semitism in their country, or they want to come to a Jewish school, you know, whatever reasons, or parents or grandparents are Holocaust survivors, and, you know, they want to find out about why they died, you know, things like that. Once in a while, I've had 7 cases where I've had women who I went through gerus with came not Jewish, and again, most of those cases, I would say 4 out of those 7 cases are women that just really had to convert because they had been converted by their non-Jewish mothers, but they converted Reform or conservative, and they had to convert Kalacha. I have 3 students that converted from Christianity. So there's one girl, Rachel, who is from Sussex County, New Jersey. She was in Catholic school. And she was about, when she was about 13 years old, she was very spiritual. Again, what does spiritual mean? She always wanted a connection to God. That's how I'm defining it a little bit. You know, she always wanted to connect to God. And she didn't know how. And she said she grew up, you know, whatever, she was all of 13, 14 years old, and went to Catholic school her whole life. And she was always told that she has to love Jesus. Mm-hmm. But no one ever told her how. You know, you got to love Jesus. We love Jesus. We love Jesus. And the preacher would tell them, we love Jesus. But she didn't know how to do that. And the way she says in her own words, she says, I was 14 years old, you know, I definitely didn't love him. I don't even think I liked him. You know? She said, no one's telling me how to connect. How do you have to tell someone you have to love this person. You know, how do you connect to him? So she Googled, get this, true story. She shows in my house for Shabbos now. She Googled how to have a relationship to God. And what came up? A shir on Wayu Torah. Talk about Hashgacha, right? A shir on Wayu Torah. And she listened to it. It was audio. She was listening to the shir and she was blown away. Oh. And she's like, what's this Torah? This Torah is a way to connect to God. Like, this is what I'm looking for. She listened to a few more shir on Wayu Torah that had to do with relationship to God. You know, heard about the Rambam for the first time and about relationship and love of God and etc. And she was like mind blown the way she explains it. And she's like, I needed more of this. So she started listening to more classes, and already at that point she was maybe a sophomore, maybe a junior already in Catholic school. She decided she needs to convert. So she went to her local Reform rabbi in Sussex County, New Jersey, and he's like, maybe think about this first. She's like, no, I know that I want to connect to God, and this is, seems to be the best way to do it. I've never felt more connected to God after hearing these classes. Anyway, she decided to go to the school that has the teachers that teach those classes, and that was YU. So she applied to YU, and of course she's Catholic. We've never had someone come from Catholic school. I've had Catholics before, but not from real religious Catholic school Catholics. And she came, and of course, you know, I got the heads up. You know, you're getting this Catholic girl. We're taking her. She's going through. We started the Gayrus process, but part of the Gayrus process, the big difference between Orthodox Gayrus and Reform and Conservative is learning, is Torah, is mitzvot, Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot, you know. And so that was part of her learning. So she started the process. She filled out the paperwork, but her education with us was going to be, you know, a big part of her conversion. And it took 2 years. And 2 years after she registered at Stern. You know, I went to the mikvah with her. It was really amazing. I had the basin meetings with her. But anyway, so she came to Stern, and she's almost married a year now. She's pregnant with her first child. She changed her name to Hodaya when she converted, and she feels connected to God in a very meaningful way. You know, through her learning of Torah. Just as a follow-up to the story, about a year after she came to Stern, she came over to me and she said, "My priest that I'm very connected with from high school wants to come and see what connected me so much here, what turned me on here. Do you mind if he comes and sits in on your class?" And I'm like, yes, I do mind. I'm not having a Catholic priest sit in on my Chumash class. Oh. You know, that's not on my bucket list. So anyway, I get a call from I work with someone named Rabbi Lawrence Hadjioff. He works for me in my program.
Oh, he's good.
And he's great. So he calls me up and he's like, you know, Rachel's priest wants to come. And I'm like, I said no, what about you? And he's like, I'm not having a dialogue with a Catholic priest. Anyway, he calls me up the next day and he goes, we have to have him. I'm like, what are you talking about? He says, Rachel told me that he's Jewish. His mother's Jewish and his father's Catholic and he's Jewish. We got to have this guy. I'm like, okay, two conditions. He doesn't say a word. He sits in my class and I'm not having a dialogue, right? He sits in my class in the back quietly. And two, you cut your class and you come sit with him in my class because I'm not doing this by myself. So anyway, we did that. He came to class. This guy, Father Daniel, you know, in the whole garb. Anyway, he sat quietly. He's taking notes the whole time. You know, I don't know what he wrote down. I think it was a good class. It was about the mission. We were at a good point in Breishi. Anyway, at the end of the class, he raised his hand. He got up and he said, do you mind if I say something before we leave? Am I going to say no? You know? So he gets up and he says, listen, he said, I really appreciated coming here today. And I just want to tell you something about myself. He says, I grew up and my mother was Jewish and my father was Catholic. And he said, I always wanted to connect to God. I always felt spiritual. I always wanted to connect to God. And he said, I saw that my father's family was always talking about Jesus and how much they loved Jesus. And they were so connected to God. My mother's family, there was no connection to God. There was nothing. There was nothing from my mother's side of family. If my mother's Jewish family had been more connected to God, I'd probably be a rabbi now. Unbelievable. Anyway, so my point is, with those stories, is that there is our way to connect to God is through Torah. And it's very interesting. And again, like I said, you know, for those of you who just came also, I think that, you know, one way to define spirituality is a connection to God. And again, it's not just, spirituality is not just synonymous with something inspirational, because things that are inspirational are often fleeting, right? So something that's inspirational can lead to a connection to God, but it's that connection to God which is lasting. And I think that Torah, you know, really is the key to that connection to God. And our challenge is to take those moments that we're inspired, you hear a shir and you're inspired by it, and then translate them into feelings of spirituality and connection to God. And that's what we need to do for ourselves, not just for our children, for ourselves, you know, for our children, for me, for my students as well. One last little anecdote. A couple weeks ago, I don't know if anybody here gets Mishpacha magazine. A couple weeks ago in Mishpacha magazine, a woman wrote a letter asking how to inspire her daughters, because she sees her daughters are so inspired in the superficial world, and her boys have Torah, and you know, her girls, she feels like the equivalent of what her girls get is tznius, and that's just not doing it for them, you know. But her boys are so inspired by their learning, by their Torah. And I'm like, you know, my kids laugh that I read Mishpacha and I get all worked up. And they're like, why do you get this thing? You know, once in a while, this one I think I flung against the wall even, you know. And they're like, why do you get it? I'm like, it's part of my Onik Shabbos, you know. Like, and I do think they deal with serious issues. The things that get me most upset are the letters that, like, people write. It's not like, but anyway, but they're dealing with, you know, some real issues. You know, I live in Muncie. We moved to Muncie. My husband runs a mental health clinic in Muncie. So, you know, to really get his pulse on the community. Anyways, so the following week, a Beis Yaakov Mechanech, a Beis Yaakov educator, responded the same way I would have responded. I'm glad she did it, you know. She was like a principal of some big Beis Yaakov, and she said, and she wrote, and I wrote here, she said, the equivalent of Torah for girls is Torah. Why do we take little girls and teach them only about tznius? She says, and then we wonder why we're raising superficial girls. You know, she said, let's teach them Parsha, let's teach them Torah in a meaningful way, and then they'll be connected, and other stuff will come, Kabbalah mitzvot will come, and whatever. I mean, she wrote a whole big long letter, I'm only taking a piece of it, that was the gist of it. But I was so blown away by that. Like, this is what people need to do. Teach Torah in a meaningful way. Why is it watered down for women? And by the way, spirituality is not just a women's issue at all. Everyone needs more spirituality infused in their learning. You know, the men and the women. My high school experience was very, you know, into this very, you know, into first I told you it was very intellectual, but I had, like, you know, I would say 18, it's co-ed, and there were 15 guys and 3 women in my top shir, let's say. And of the 15 guys, I think 3 of them are really Shomer Torah mitzvahs today. And the answer is why. Again, it's a different place now. Yeah. You know, I went a long time ago. But the answer, and they did come from, you know, modern Orthodox families. And my feeling, and this is why I feel so passionate about this, I feel that maybe it was very intellectualized and not emotional at all. There was no emotional component. It was such intellectual, like I said, we can rip apart a Ramban and we can analyze things, forget Ramban, we know Tosfos on a, you know, deep level, but like there was no translation of that translating into connection to Hashem. And I think that, you know, it's interesting, I have a cousin who teaches in SAR high school. And she recently said to me, she's like, oh, I met one of the teachers who started teaching there is a Rebbe of your son's from, or a Madrich of your son's from Karen Biavna. My son was in KBY for 2 years. And he said, you know, I really, you know, like he sent regards. So I said, really? He's teaching in SAR, and I knew he was coming out back from Israel after many years in KBY. And I was surprised that he went to SAR. I'm like, you know, how is he doing there? Like, he's not such a nice guy. Big Talmid Chacham, but not like the coolest guy that, you know. So I said, how's he doing at SAR? And she said, the kids love him. I said, really? Like, why? You know, like, he doesn't have, like, the best sense of humor. He's not the coolest, you know. And she thought for a second, she's like, because he talks about Hashem. He translates Torah into connection to Hashem, and the kids love that, and they're looking for that. And I feel like this is what we need to be giving them more of. And sometimes people feel that they assume sometimes that something that's emotional is not intellectual. And that's false. First of all, you have a whole field of psychology that's all emotional. That's a very intellectual field. You know, the Gemara, we've been saying the Gemara that Rebbe would sometimes cry when he would give over Torah. You know, the emotional component, learning cannot just be an intellectual exercise. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, one of the greatest intellectual minds of our generation, wrote a sefer called Mefakshei Panecha. And he wrote, and he explains in the book, he says, if a boy didn't learn well 200 years ago, he would be in Am Haaretz, but he would still stay in the community. Now, those kids are leaving, and the stakes are much higher. We have to speak to their hearts. He talks at Ledaber Elibo. elibam. We have to speak to their hearts. And this is, again, from the biggest intellectual mind of our generation, one of the biggest intellectual minds. He has a whole chapter about whether yeshivot need to recalibrate. You know, do they change because of students' needs? Do they stay the same? Do they keep the high standards of intellectualism and hope that the students will pick it up? You know, we need to infuse more of this spirituality, of the connection, because the hard reality is that when we fail, it's worse than the yeshivas in Europe. You know, people are leaving. You know, everyone's talking about, you know, kids going off the derech. And I think that this is a big reason. I think the education isn't pulling them to stay. There's an organization in Israel called Lev Ladat, which is starting to really gain a lot of speed. And their whole point is that just because Israelis can read Hebrew and they can read texts, it doesn't mean that they feel anything for it. And you see that. You see Datilumi, you see so many people who are so learned who are not feeling connected to God at all. And I see that, like in Stern, I see my students. I happen to be the only teacher that teaches on all the levels, because I teach my machina really elementary, and then I teach lower intermediate, and then I teach intermediate, and then I teach advanced. And it's great because I set up my advanced students with my beginner students to learn v'chavrusa. It's really wonderful. And I see that maybe, you know, 5% of the students there really feel connected to God by like analyzing a really, you know, difficult Tosfot, you know? And probably 5% of the students on the other end, you know, really feel that, you know, spiritual from a, you know, from a good story or a good song, you know? And in my opinion, and people, you know, first of all, in my opinion, it's not just the 90 people of the Hamonam and 90% of the people in the middle that need both, but both sides need both. You know, like I tell people, like you think in my Machina classes, like I sit for an hour and a half twice a week and sing Kumsit songs. Like it has to be based in Torah. It has to be based in Torah, but there needs to be value-based learning. You know, my friend Ellie Kamenetsky is, you know, teaches at SKH. She's a friend of mine for many years. And she developed a value-based learning curriculum in Navi. Like that's, it has to translate into real meaningful learning. And it doesn't mean that it can't be intellectual. You need that combination of intellectualism and spirituality and meaning. And I think that's very important. Just turning to the sheets, because I'm running out of time here. I could go on this. You know, I feel very passionate about this. And I think this will be such... This will be such a key antidote to our fear of having kids go off the derech, you know? And I feel like that's what they get often in Israel.
I just wonder, can you just give a concrete example of Hasidic Torah emotional? Like if they're reading Mishnah or
whatever. So everything has, yeah, I actually did. Maybe afterwards I'll show you. I brought a final of mine. I teach in high school and I'm not in Stern. And I'll show you an example of that afterwards. Yeah, okay, I'll give one example now, because a concrete example is good. First of all, everything you teach has to come down to a lekach. It has to come down to some sort of message that we learn that's applicable. And everything, you could do that in Torah. Because if we believe that Torah is a way of life, and, you know, like when I teach 12th graders locally in Muncie, 12th graders, Sefer Breishit. So they know that Breishit is a pattern of human behavior. Why are we looking at Adam and Chava sin? We're not just looking at Adam and Chava sin because, you know, we want to see what the different Mepharshim say. Because if we're looking at the first downfall, the downfall of man, Chava and Adam and Chava were told, you could do anything except this one thing. And they did that one thing that they weren't supposed to do. So what was the motivation? What caused them to do it? What was her conversation with the snake that, you know, that again, maybe it was her Yetzer Hara speaking inside. But, you know, what was it that we can learn from, that we can be on guard about, that we see ourselves in similar experiences? You know, so I think everything you learn has to have something concrete, whether it's one of the Kelim of the Mishkan. And again, you know, there are ways to do this. But at the end of every, you know, every lesson, or every, I wouldn't say every single class has to end with something like that, but every topic, certainly if you're doing it topically, and, you know, it shouldn't just be that your goal for this class was to be able to analyze this Ramban. You then have to translate it into how you make it meaningful to us. So I'll give you one example. You know, I give a whole, it's funny, I brought it just in case anybody asked me that question. So this is my final I just gave to 12th graders. Okay, there was the typical, you know, I had a Ramban that they had to rip apart, and I numbered it, you know, 1 through 45 in terms of the lines. In which line does the Ramban disagree with Rashi? In which line does he bring his own opinion? In which line, you know, is he saying what, you know, what the Ebenezer says and then disputing it? You know, so I have your parsha and your stuff. And then the last section I called Musagim ve'inyanim b'sefer Breishit, topics. So I said, number one, and this is Sefer Breishit, final in Sefer Breishit. Imagine you were writing a parenting column for a popular Jewish magazine. You're responding to a letter that a parent wrote about the challenges of having a teenage son at risk for going off the derech. How would you respond using two lessons learned from Breishit? Be sure to be specific and include the Or HaChaim's approach to Parsha Toldot. You know what I'm saying? Because, for example, I'll have to explain a little bit, you know, because there's a whole discussion about what Yitzchak was so blind to Esav. Like, what, it's my favorite Archa, one of my favorite Archaims. Yeah, 100%. Sir, it's definitely easier in Breishit, but I've taught every Sefer, and you could do this, and I've done this in every Sefer. And I was working with Ellie a little bit to try to, you know, develop something more formally. But so the Archaim says so beautifully, so everybody's like, oh, maybe his eyes were weak, were they physically weak, or, he, you know, Esav had such a good Kibbutz of aim, he didn't really know. The Or HaChaim says he knew where Esau was heading, but he didn't want to keep demoralizing him. So he thought the best way to build him up, if I give him a bracha, and then we talk about what the bracha is, it's a beautiful modern day understanding of good parenting, you know? Like, if I give him a bracha, maybe that will turn him around, you know? So I want them to use that example. And I don't want them to give fluffy answers and I take off for that. They have to be specific with mefarshim. Here's another one. Imagine you are a sharchan and you're presenting a talk to young singles about what to look for in a spouse. What advice would you give them from what we've learned in Sefer Breishit? Bring two specific examples supported by Mefarshim. Anything. We talked about what Ezer Kenegdo is. We talked about the creation of women. We talked about Parshas Chayesara, the Rabbeinu Nissim, the Ran in one of his Svarim talks about Midos versus Deos. What's important? Why was he looking? What was he looking? What was Eliezer looking for in Rivka? Here's another one. Imagine you are writing a letter to a friend who has just gone through a very difficult hardship. Using two ideas that we learned about Nisyonot, how would you give her chizuk? Support each idea with a specific perush. We talk about Elokim Nisat Avraham, the first time the word is used with Akedah. We talk about Nisyonos. Again, translating it into how we can use Torah that we're learning into real life situations. That makes it meaningful. You know, I always bring them, I always start every Chumash class with the first Rashi in every Sefer. Sometimes we're so busy learning a Sefer, we learn it in a vacuum. And I only realized this like 5 years ago, and I've been teaching for a long time and learning for a long time. The first Rashi of every Sefer, I'm not going to go through it with you, go look it up, that's your homework, you know? The first Rashi of every Sefer has to do with Hashem's love for Bnei Israel. Right? He starts out, why does it start out with creation of the world and not the first mitzvah? Because he wants to show that he is the creator of the world, that if he wants to protect Bnei Israel out of love for Bnei Israel, then in the future no one should say you took our lands because I'm the creator of the world, I can give it to you. Shemot, why is he counting them? To show his love for Bnei Israel. Vayikra, why does he start with Vayikra? You know, why does he just say Vayidaber? What's the word Vayikra doing there? Because he wants to, he's introducing, it's an eloquent language, he's introducing a way to connect to him, and out of love for Bnei Israel, Bnei Chiba, he says, Bamidbar, the same as Shemot. Why is he counting Bnei Israel again? Because of his love for Bnei Israel. Dvarim, why does he hint? What is he hinting at? He only mentions places. Look at the first Rashi. Beremes, he says, he's mentioning places that Bnei Israel camped out in their journeys because those are the places that Bnei Israel angered Hashem and they did things, they rebelled against him. But Hashem doesn't want to say it outwardly because of his love for Bnei Israel. So I'm like, look what Rashi's message is. Rashi's one of the only Mefarshim that doesn't have a formal introduction to the Torah. One of my classes in CERN, I teach Hakdamos. Just the Hakdamos of different Mefarshim to different Svarim. Rashi doesn't have a Hakdama. I think this is his Hakdama. It's his way of saying, you know, and Rashi is the first one to do Parshanut. It's his way of saying, you know, before anything, this book is a relationship between us and Bnei and Hashem. And that's what we have to learn. You know, I say to my students all that, my students ask me, Ms. Schechter, why do you care what this word means? Why do we need to find five different explanations and look at where the precedent is, and here it's mentioned in Shemot, it means this, but then it's in Devarim, it means this. Like, just tell us what it means. Who cares how many different explanations it needs? Just tell us what it means. You know, we want the art scroll. Just tell us. And I say, listen, you know, let's say there's a guy that you really, you know, you mentioned a guy even in college, you know, like people like stop and listen. Let's say there's a guy you really like, you really want to, you know, you're looking to have a relationship with him, and he sends you a text. I just had this conversation with Lindsay Brandwine from Florida, from Miami, not outside Miami, and I'm like, Lindsay, she sends you a text. Dear Lindsay, I'd love to hang out with you soon, right? A smiley face emoji. You're going to look at this and you're going to be like, okay, why do you write dear? You wrote dear, not just Lindsay. What does it mean love? I'd love to hang out. He didn't say like. What does it mean love? What does hang out mean? Like just with me? With other people? With one other person? With 10 other people? What does soon mean? Is soon now? In an hour? Is it tomorrow? Is it next week? Is it in 6 months? Smiley face emoji? Why did he use that one? You know, there's no hearts in the eyes. It's not a big smile. It's just a little smile. You know what I'm saying? Why are you going to super analyze it? I think it's a great mashal.
Yeah,
why are you going to super analyze it? Because you care. Because you want to know what this message is. Because you care about this guy and you care about the relationship. So here Hashem is giving us, Hashem is giving us the Torah, which is his gift to us. We want to know every single word in that thing because that's going to be the connection to Hashem. And I think that's what we have to emphasize. It's a way of teaching. It's a way of framing your Chumash classes. That it's not just, you know, to be able to do a comparative parshanut. I feel strongly about this. I see it. I see people thirsting for this. They want meaning. They want connection. And you don't have to water down the intellectual approach. I just want to finish because I just want to go through, you know, just to end. Like I said, I can't do, you know, a shir without, or a talk without any basis in Torah. You know, I gave a shir right before Shavuos. I was a scholar resident in Teaneck, in one of the shuls in Teaneck. And you know, I gave a shir before Shavuos. They wanted to do, you know, something about leading up to Matan Torah. And you know what I spoke about? Leaving Matan Torah. This was like Erev Shavuos, you know, that Shabbos before Shavuos. What do you mean leaving Matan Torah? And here, if you see, the tzitzit I gave you, Dvarim Perek Dalet, there are two examples of Matan Torah. There's two instances of Matan Torah in the Torah. The first one is the first one in Yitro, in Parshat Yitro and Shmot. And then 40 years later, when Moshe is repeating the Torah in Dvarim, he gives over the Torah again in Parshat Betzchanan, right? So I think that the message to us, it was very easy to be inspired at Matan Torah, right? There was lightning and thunder and the mountain was hovering and you're hearing God's voice and it was very inspiring. That's not the challenge. The challenge wasn't being inspired at Matan Torah. The challenge isn't being inspired on Shavuos when it's fun to stay up all night and learn and maybe this good cheesecake, you know, and it's like a thing, you know, ever since you're little, you know? But like, the challenge is, what about a week later? What about a month later? What about when they leave Har Sinai? What about 40 years later? And again, when I gave this whole shir, I'm only doing one little tiny piece of it now, but when I gave the whole shir, I talked about a year later when they left Har Sinai. What was the message Moshe was giving them? 40 years later, what's the message Moshe is giving them? And that's why in your sheets, you know, the Atai Yisrael, this is right before Moshe repeats the Aseres Hadibros. The Atai Yisrael, Shema lachukim ve'al mishpatim asher anochi melamed etchem la'asot, leman tichyu. There's a desperation. Some people don't like Sefer Dvarim because there's not a lot of drama. It's one of my favorite Sfarim. It's one of five, you know? But it's so powerful because of the backdrop, because of the setting. It's the 40th year. It's the new generation. Moshe's about to die. He doesn't want them to repeat the mistakes they made because Dvarim begins the same way that Bamidbar began. They were on the threshold of entering Eretz Israel, and they failed the first time. So Moshe's desperate to make sure they succeed, and he's not going to be there. So he's saying, listen to these mitzvos, chukim and mishpatim, asher anochi melameid etchem la'asot. It's not just learning it. You have to learn it, limud al manat la'asot. There has to be something tangible that comes from it. You have to do. It's not just learning intellectually. Leman tichyu, in order that you should live. And all the mefarshim talk about tichyu. It doesn't just mean live and not die. Live a meaningful life. And if you see, he continues, Hashem Elokeinu karati manu brit b'chor, in the next source, Hashem made a bris with us 40 years ago at Har Sinai. Lo et avoteinu karat Hashem et ha-brit hazot, ki itanu anachnu ela po hayom, kulanu chayim. It wasn't just them that Hashem made the brit with. It's us today. It's alive. And then he says, and I'll end with this point, two last things. In the next source, we start a little late. Va'atai Yisrael, ma Hashem Elokecha sho'am mimcha. So then he gives over the Aseres HaDibros, and then he continues, and he says, B'nai Israel, what is Hashem asking of you? Ki im li yirat Hashem alkecha lalechat b'chol drachav, la'ava oto, la'avod et Hashem alkecha b'chol levcha b'chol nevshcha, lishmar mitzvotav et chukotav asher nochi mitzavcha yom l'tov lach. What is Hashem asking of you? Only to fear Him and follow Him in His ways and to love Him and to worship Him with all your heart and all your soul, to follow the mitzvos and the chukim and mishpatim that I'm commanding you today for your own good. So everybody asks, what do you mean only to do this? Is it a small thing? Like Moshe, the way Moshe says it, like, all Hashem is asking you to do this and this and this, love Hashem, fear Him, follow Torah, mitzvot. What do you mean all Hashem is asking you? Is it a small thing? So a lot of the Mefarshim say, you know what, to Moshe was a small thing. Because Moshe wasn't, it was easy. But then other Mefarshim don't like that answer, like really don't like that answer. And say what? Moshe was so insane. It's like a rich man saying to a poor man, come on, it's only $1,000. $1,000 to you is nothing, but to me it's a big deal. And maybe, and the ones that say that Moshe said that say, well, maybe Moshe was such an anav, he really didn't know that he was on such a higher level. And but a lot of the Mefarshim don't like that answer. And one of my favorite Mefarshim is the Sefer Yikarim of Rav Yosef Albo in the last source on the first page. And you know what he says? I'm just going to sum it up because I don't have time. He says the reason that Moshe says it like this is because of the key words Latovlach at the end. When you have a reward, if somebody would say to you, Hashem would say to you, here, you have 120 years of life, make it meaningful. You're like, oh my gosh, how do I do that? It's such a lofty goal, I don't even know where to start. So Hashem is saying, here, I'm giving you a 613-step recipe for a meaningful existence. And if you take it like that, and you're told what to do, and that's what Yosef Hamel says, that's why Moshe says, what is Hashem asking of you? And he uses a beautiful mashal, a perfect mashal, like a doctor. You go to the doctor, and you know someone is having chest pains, and he's like, you know, you don't eat well, you're heading to diabetes, you're having blockage. This is all you need to do is eat healthy, cut this and this out of your diet, exercise. You're like, what do you know all I need to do? It's a lot of effort. Just because it's a lot of effort, look at what the reward will be. It's for your own good. Follow it. It's for your own good. And that's what Rabbi Yosef Albo says, Moshe is telling them, all I'm asking them is to do this, it's for your own good. And then finally, again, just skipping along, at the end of Dvarim, in the end of Dvarim, in Nitzavim, Moshe says again, and this is what's so applicable to us, Lo itchem levatchem anochi koreit et habrit hazot, et hala hazot. And you know something, the same way I told you, you know, a month ago, in the 40th year, it's not just the previous generation that Hashem made the bris with, but also with you, it's not just you. Ki et asher yeshno po imanu omeid hayom lifnei Hashem Elokeinu, ve'et asher einenu po imanu hayom. It's also the people who are not here, us. You have this gift of Torah. Hashem gives you this gift to connect to Him. Use it. If you are Jewish, this is your inheritance. Rachel wasn't Jewish, she made it her inheritance. This is our inheritance. Take use of it. And he finishes, Moshe finishes the Sefer in Dvarim Lamed, Ki mitzvah azot asher anochi mitzavcha hayom lo nifleitu mimcha v'lo rechokahu, lo bashamayim hi, famous line, le'mor mi yale lanu hashamayma. Don't think it's so far away. Don't think Torah is inaccessible to you. Don't think it's out of your reach. Ki karove lecha hadavar me'od, beficha u'bilavcha lasato. It's in our grasp. It's accessible to us. And Rashi said, and the Gemara in Ervin, Rashi says, Rav Amar, the Gemara in Ervin says, Rav Amar, how is it accessible? Asei mo'adim la'Torah. Make time to learn. If it's on a Sunday morning, if it's once a week, if it's once a month, if it's every day, this is our key to connecting to God, and this is our key to connecting spiritually and infusing spirituality in our lives. And don't think that it's too far away, and don't think it's out of reach, because this is ultimately, you know, it's our choice. And that's why he ends Sefer Dvarim, you know, that you have chayim v'mavet natati levanacha bracha v'aklala u'bacharta b'chayim. You want a meaningful existence? You want an existence where you feel connected to God, to our Creator? This is it. The key is Torah. And that's the message we need to give to ourselves, and that's the message we need to give to our kids and to our students, and ultimately that's how we're going to feel more connected to God. Sorry that I rushed that a little bit. Anyway, have a good day. Kol hakavod for coming out on a Sunday in the summer.
Do you have any lectures online?
I do. I have stuff on Wayu Torah.
On Wayu Torah?
I speak in Midrash Yom Rishon.
I'm not sure how to do this in high school, 68, 72. This is where my resources are.